Blog Talk Radio.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Also, we have all these cool story things now. They, like, pop up. They last for 24 hours. Don't forget to check those out. Sometimes I post things about giveaways there. You never know. You can win something, a book, CD, tickets. Never know. Just check it out. But thank you so much for supporting the show. Well, today I'm talking with some specialists. And I say specialists. One is a doctor and one is actually a person dealing with the issue, talking to them about migraines. Have you ever had a headache? You took some Tylenol, probably felt fine in about an hour or so. Migraines are a whole other creature. So I believe we have our specialist on the line right here. Good morning. Is this Dr. Charleston?
Good morning. This sure is. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to get the other line. I think this is Jamie.
Awesome.
Jamie, that's you?
Hi. I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So let me just let the audience know, I have Dr. Charleston IV online. He's in headache medicine, a clinical associate professor, Department of Neurology, University of Michigan. And then I have Jamie Sanders. She is actually a person living with migraines, and she is the migraine diva. And she is an advocate for trying to help people get the right treatment and care and get the right information out there about migraines to people. I also want to give a thanks to Mary Franklin at the National Headache Foundation. She connected me with these individuals, so I really want to thank her very much for that. So let's start out in the beginning, Dr. Charleston. What's the difference between the migraine and the headache?
Well, migraine is really a syndrome. First of all, I really appreciate the opportunity to share today, so thank you, Mrs. Keys. So migraine is one of the 300 different headache disorders that we have. It is a syndrome that includes a headache part, but there's other parts to it. So there's other phases to migraine. So you may have what we call prodrome or premonitory phase. That's one phase. About a fourth of patients have a aura phase, whereas it's a reversible neurological syndrome. Usually it's visual, but it can be sensory and it can be other neurological things as well. Then you have the headache phase, and that's what a lot of people are familiar with. And this is moderate, it's usually, so it's by definition, moderate to severe headache disorder that is usually one side, but it can be both sides. It can be pulsating. It can have a lot of different qualities to it. It can cause people to not want to do things that they would normally that they normally could do because of that. The pain level is one of the most disabling disorders actually in the world. I mean, it's number two in the world, particularly, I think stroke is first and then migraine. So when we look at all cases of disability, particularly in reproductive years, for sure. And so it's one of those, it's a debilitating disorder. And then it's all usually associated with, it can have a lot of associated symptoms, but very commonly with nausea or vomiting, sensitivity to lights and sounds and even smells. And then there's the next phase is called the resolution phase or the postdromal phase, and there can be problems with concentrating. I mean, it's just fatigue. I mean, you can have some psychological comorbidities. When I say comorbidities, I mean one disorder that happens with another disorder that happens more than chance, more than coincidence. So people can feel anxious, they can feel depressed, they can just be tired and fatigued and things like that with it.
There's a whole bunch of things going on with this other than just a headache. Jamie, what was the time you first had a migraine? When did you first have a migraine and what proceeded? Did you have these prodromes and all these things that Dr. Charlton is talking about?
When I had my first migraine, I was 8 years old, and I was not familiar at all. Yes, I was 8.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And so there was no language about all of the different phases of migraine for me at that time. All I knew was there was this intense, sudden onset of pain, and it was extremely debilitating. And when you're a child and dealing with that level of severity when it comes to pain, it's just unfathomable to you. Luckily for me, though, because it does run in my family, my mother, who had migraine as a child also, understood and recognized what my symptoms were. So I was able to get diagnosed at that age, which I think is very rare for a lot of children, especially in the 1980s. But migraine has been in my life for the majority of my life. So it's been quite a journey for me. I can just tell you that.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Dr. Charlton, is that something unusual that children get migraines? Is there a certain age range that's more affected by this? Are men more affected than women?
No, so generally, so yes, you can have a migraine as a child in a pediatric age. Usually the ratio is 1-to-1 in pediatrics. So the challenge is, I mean, it can be an even people younger than Jamie was. And sometimes I know there's colleagues of mine that to try to get the kids to actually explain it as they draw pictures or what have you, or look at faces and things like that to kind of describe how they're feeling, because it's very challenging. As we grow older, when you get into the young adult years, you start to see a separation in the prevalence, and it starts to tend to affect women more than men, usually about 2-to-3-to-1 at that point. Whether it's, some other different components, but it's still a very prevalent, we're talking about a very prevalent disorder. So about 1 in every 5, I say, well, it's 6%, I'll say, put these, 6% of men in the United States, that's the average estimate, are affected. That's millions of men, and about 18% of women, millions of women. So. Yeah, and it has a different spectrum. Like everyone, their people have different spectrums. Some people only have a migraine once a year. Some people have it every day. I mean, and so there is a pain spectrum with it, but it's very highly prevalent.
Jamie, so you said that you were able to deal with it early because your mother had migraines. Now, are you on a medication right now, if you don't mind me asking or sharing, to help with the migraines? And what is that medication?
Sure. So, yes, I am on several preventives. Like Dr. Charlton said, there is a spectrum with migraine. For the past 13 years, I've been chronic and intractable, which means I've been in pain every single day. So for me, managing my migraine, my specific migraine, is more about managing the daily levels of severity and intensity of my pain. I am not expecting it to go away. So what I'm trying to do is make it so that I can have some semblance of a quality of life with my pain. So the medications that I currently take, I do Botox every 3 months as a preventive, as well as several different nerve blocks, as well to help manage the pain. I take about, I think it's 3 different oral preventive medications. One is a blood pressure medication. One is an Alzheimer's medication. And the third is, and you have to excuse me because I have what we call migraine brain, so sometimes I forget things. But I have a third one as well. And I take several supplements as well. So I take vitamin D, I take vitamin B and folic acid as well every day. And what that does for me is just...
Let me ask Dr. Charlton real quick. Let me just ask him real quick. Is this normal, what I'm hearing? Do you have people taking such varieties of medication? Is it safe to mix the quote-unquote standard medications with, say, alternative medicines? What is your thoughts on that?
So, yeah, so there's a wide range of different therapy. Let's say therapies that we could do for preventive. So, real quick, to me, a comprehensive plan, this gets to your question, a comprehensive headache treatment plan includes abortive, so something to acute, to take care of, try to abort or get rid of that acute pain. It also includes prevention, things to try to decrease the number of days, the severity, the duration of the headache, the decrease the number of abortive medications you have to take, help the medications work better, help improve quality of life. That's kind of what a prevention does. And then there, I call it a tradition, non-pharmacological modalities, like in the traditional sense where there's headache healthiness and sometimes behavioral modalities that can help. So yes, there is a combination that I consider that a comprehensive headache treatment plan. And there's combinations that you can do that are safe for patients or people with migraine disorders. And so yes, absolutely, you could do that. And sometimes you have to do more than one. It's almost similar to, I think about it with my training in internal medicine with blood pressure, right? Sometimes we have to do, particularly in African-American population, you may need two or three different blood pressure agents for even just essential hypertension, so essential high blood pressure. So sometimes the disorder is, the migraine disorders is as such that you need various treatments. Yes, ma'am.
Now, Jamie, did you change your diet or change things that you eat? Are there triggers in food? I read something about chocolate and nuts. Do you have any triggers in food, Jamie? Or do you stay away from certain things?
Absolutely. Food is definitely part of a list of triggers that many people with migraine have to monitor. For me, my specific food triggers are some of the more common ones. So alcohol or red wine, aged cheeses, any types of processed foods that have nitrites or nitrates in them, MSG. Popcorn is a trigger for me also. I can't eat popcorn. The smell of raw onions is a trigger for me. And cranberry juice and apple juice and grape juice are triggers for me as well.
Wow.
So I have to avoid certain things. I have changed my diet to some extent. I try to really limit the amount of, I don't eat processed foods. I read labels religiously because there are so many hidden additives and preservatives and hidden MSG and hidden wheat and gluten in a lot of products. So I have to make sure I read a lot of labels to make sure I'm not getting any of that in my food. And I avoid dairy, and I also avoid a lot of sugar. Sugar is something I just don't care for, so I try to avoid that as
well.
Can
you do soy? Can you do soy or almond milk or some other alternatives?
Yes. I don't do soy, but I do almond milk or oat milk. And and like Dr. Charleston said, it is a comprehensive way of approaching managing migraine. And so there are other aspects to my treatment plan, behavioral modification. So, you know, I have a pain psychologist, which helps me with not just managing how my pain affects me in my emotional state, but also how to deal with or coping with that pain in a healthy way. I meditate. I do breathing exercises. I do massage therapy. I acupuncture. So there are many different levels.
I like massage therapy.
Yes.
I like that. I like the massage therapy. Now, I had a migraine. I remember the first time I had a migraine myself. I don't get them often, but it was the first time. I had no idea the debilitation, and I had to go to the bathroom and run my head under the cold water. I had to go in my room. Any sound. When I moved to get up of me, I thought I was going to throw up. It was like, I guess, I felt like a classic migraine, but I was like, oh, my God, what the hell is happening? You know, should I call the ambulance? Dr. Charleston, at what point should somebody call an ambulance? Maybe it's not a migraine. Maybe it's something else. How would a person know?
Well, there's times, there are signs that we call secondary. Like you're looking for secondary causes of headaches. So remember at the beginning, I said that there's 300 different causes of headaches. Some of them, what we classify as primary headache disorders. And that's where migraine, tension type headache, even hypnic headache and some like cluster headaches, all those types of things, they fit in that. But a lot of times you have to, rule out, a different, secondary headaches. So there's secondary headaches as well. And there's a mnemonic that we use and that we teach. And there's been several variations of that, but we call it SNOOP. Okay. So the S, so S-N-O-O-P, right? I mean, there's variations.
Okay.
There's a lot of P's and things like that, but just in general. So if there's systemic symptoms such as fever or weight loss, or secondary risk factors such as systemic cancer or HIV or immunocompromised. So if there's systemic systems, that's the S. We're concerned. If there's neurological symptoms, so confusion, impaired alertness and consciousness or weakness. I mean, it's particularly the first time, because remember I said that there can be a reversible neurological symptom, but when it happens the first time, we need to make sure that there isn't anything going on in the sense that there's a secondary or a stroke or aneurysm or something like that. We need to make sure that it is attributed to the actual headache disorder. By example two, migraine is a diagnosis of exclusion. So sometimes we have to exclude different things.
Okay.
And you may have some things that overlap or some symptoms that overlap, but neurological symptoms, particularly the first time, we want to, that's a worrisome sound. That's a red flag. The onset, if it's sudden, abrupt, like in a split second, or we sometimes call thunderclap headaches, we want to do that. We want to probably get some neuroimaging and evaluate the reasons for that, because migraine, while it can be moderate to severe, it usually doesn't happen like all of a sudden. Okay. It can sometimes, but we got to rule things out. And then the last, O is like if it's older. So if people get a new onset or progressive headache, particularly when they're over 50. So if 50 and you're starting a new headache disorder, that's a red flag. And then, if it's a change from previous headache, that you've had before, so it's different, it's progressive, or there's a postural component to it. So when you sit up, now people with migraine, they do want to go and lay down in a dark room,
that's what I
did. But it's another thing. It's another thing when you sit up and you have a severe headache, and you can tell it goes up just by the position that you're in. So that's some of the P's, and there's some other P's, but that's basic. So that's SNOOP. So systemic system, neurological symptoms, the onset, paying attention to that. If it happened in older populations, previous migraine history has changed, or a previous headache history, there's something that's a big change.
Jamie, how did you start this Migraine Diva? What prompted you to share your story with the world?
Sure. So back in about 2011, I was feeling extremely alone in my diagnoses. At that time, I was diagnosed with chronic migraine, chronic daily headache, and new daily persistent headache. So I didn't know anybody else that looked like me who had any of these types of headache disorders. And although I had a wealth of support around me with my family, still I didn't have a community of people that understood my pain. And I have a history and a background in writing, so I started to kind of get familiar with blogging. So I started Blog the Migraine Diva. And the reason why I chose that name is because I've always been a fan of makeup. It's been an art form for me. It's a stress reliever, and that was a way for me to hold on to a piece of my identity, because migraine is a thief and it steals so much of my life. So I wanted to hold on to something. So that's why I chose that name. And this was an opportunity for me to connect with other people like myself. And I also wanted to use it as a platform to help to erase the stigma behind migraine, as well as the stigmas around mental illness, because I also live with depression and anxiety. So that's where the blog came from. That was its purpose. And it brought me into this place of advocacy that I was not intending to go, but I'm very grateful for, because it's given my pain a very, very wonderful purpose.
That's great. That's so great. I really appreciate the work I see you doing out there. Dr. Charleston, now, is there a surgery that somebody could get? Is there some surgery that could be done to get rid of a migraine? Or people just have to learn to live with it? Or it varies from person to person?
So generally, we don't advocate, and I say we, and this is like the American Headache Society, as I'm a part of that, and the National Headache Foundation. We don't really advocate surgery. One of the reasons, migraine is so complex, and the pathophysiology of migraine may vary from person to person, but there's a lot of different pathways that are involved. There's a lot of things that we don't even understand, right? That we're trying to better understand. And even when we look at the different medication, you asked that question earlier, like and therapies, they kind of work on different pathways and everything, because migraine is so complex. So I don't recommend a surgery for a migraine disorder. And I wanted to say something too, because I've had the opportunity to work with Jamie on whether it's panels or actually a group we're in now that looks at some of the disparities. And she is phenomenal. She's done a phenomenal job. The fact that she has everything that she's gone through, and she's using this not just to benefit herself, or I mean, of course, she needs, I mean, obviously needs appropriate care and everything like that, but to reach out to others. And it's very interesting too, because one of the things that I talk to my patients about, I talk to them about being a partner. So I want to partner with them, right, to help them to reach their goals. But it's a partnership. And so it actually, this is one of those disorders that it actually requires work and from on the patient's perspective, right? And so, but Jamie has gone far and beyond that, and just outside of her realm, and then just being a positive a light and positive influence. So I definitely want to give her kudos for that, because she's telling you her story.
That's really nice.
And that is, you know, and it's just amazing. So I'm glad I've had the pleasure, and we're still working together on some things. So I'm glad that I had the pleasure to actually do this conversation with her, and I wanted people to know that. So
right.
Hopefully I answered your question.
Now, Jamie, where can people go? They have your site, and I have the link there, but where else? National Headache Foundation. Are there other good places that you found that were helpful, say, for the first-time person getting a migraine and don't know anything and feel lost? Where should they go?
Yeah, first off, thank you, Dr. Charleston. That was very, very nice of you. I'm extremely humbled by the words that you used to speak of me, so thank you so much for that. But if there are some really, really wonderful organizations out there for anyone living with headache or migraine who are wanting to learn more, one good place to get a really good education is milesformigraine.org. They have patient education days, which are now virtual, so you can do that online for free. And they have walk, run, rest events, which are also virtual now because of COVID. And I believe those are free now also. That's a really good place to start, especially their education days. The Association for Migraine Disorders is another great website and organization. The American Migraine Foundation has great resources as well. And if you're looking for a resource that has multiple organizations' information, CHAMP, the Coalition for Headache and Migraine Patients, which you can find at headachemigraine.org, is another great place that has a wealth of information, especially patient guides, especially when it comes to financial assistance for the new CGRP medications that have been are being prescribed now for migraine.
Are a lot of the medications not covered? Have you found they're not covered by insurance plans? Do people have difficulty with that? Is that they're so expensive?
With these new drugs, and there's a lot of issues with access barriers when it comes to insurers and the policies that they have in place. So for a lot of these new medications, some insurers are requiring that the medication has to be prescribed by a headache specialist. And there are only, and I think Dr. Charleston probably has a more accurate number about, is it over a little over 500, Dr. Charleston?
Yes.
Headache specialists in the country. So that severely limits people's access to this treatment. And there are a lot of step therapy policies. And step therapy is when the insurer requires a patient to be on and fail several. Yes. Before
okay.
having
yeah,
access
try one.
To the
I
initial.
Hate that.
Yes.
I hate that. I've had that happen to me with different things. You have to try the one, it doesn't work, or it gives you some side effect, then you get on another one, you try the one, It's so crazy. Now, Dr. Charleston, I mean, you don't want to do anything illegal, but I mean, is there some kind of like appeal you can make to insurance companies to say, you know, look, my patient needs something right now acutely. They're suffering and we're making it worse by making them try these other medications. Is there some trick that you could say, let me put it this way. What I'm asking you is I'm a patient and I go to my doctor and I'm trying to get around the step thing. What can a patient tell their doctor that would help the doctor help them deal with the insurance company? You know what I mean?
Well, that's a loaded question because we all face this. I mean, the prior authorizations are ridiculous. So one of the things that I do when people come to see me, and they call it the Dr. Charleston book. So I really want to capture all the information because one of our medical assistants just told me yesterday, said that inpatient form that I have, that she's talking about that I have, and the headache calendars have been just a key when given for prior authorizations. And I try to tell patients that all the time, and I know it's not necessarily fun to do, but that's something that we can do because it's not just us. And I'm part of the Alliance for not part of that too, but I'm part of the Alliance for Patient Access Working Group, Migraine and Headache Working Group. And yes, we do letters and things like that. I think the biggest thing besides partnering with the physician, the patients have their voices. They need to raise their voices collectively as a community to talk to some of the insurers because, you know, I mean, and understand, I think the other thing too, that patients need to understand their insurance, right? And understand their policy and understand that, you know, the insurers, from what I've seen, they'll say the doctor didn't provide this information or the doctor didn't do it because they wanted you to think that it's the doctor's fault. And we're actually in this together. And so I think and not all insurers are like this, but I have seen this. I've seen the denial and saying that, you know, your doctor didn't provide the information and stuff like that. And so, you know, patients are upset with doctors and everything, and the doctor's upset with the insurers and, you know, trying to, you know, so we need to work together. I think there's a lot of stigma that's associated with headache disorders. I think that plays a role, a kind of an overall society role in things of what people think is important and what people don't think is important. And so I really think that, patients, you know, going to their insurance company and collectively, you know, that's why yeah. Websites or Twitter pages and things like websites like Jamie has is really important. The Coalition for Headache and Migraine Patients, CHAMP, you know, I mean, there's a collective access. It's not easy. It's not like, hey, I'm just going to go in there and knock down the barriers up.
Yeah.
Right.
Jamie, real quick, we run out of time. I want to ask you, have you experienced discrimination from doctors, say, you know, as an African-American, people not believing your pain, maybe thinking you're drug-seeking? Have you had that kind of experience, or do you know people who have had that experience?
My experience has been not so much being discriminated against because of my pain. It's been more so I've been blamed for my pain, and I've been frequently ask, am I doing enough to manage my pain? And this usually happens if I'm seeking care in an urgent care setting. And this usually comes, I think, because I have a protocol written up by my headache specialist that gives a synopsis of my headache disease, what works for me, what hasn't worked, and the specific treatment and doses that I need whenever I need to seek care in the emergency room or urgent care setting. And unfortunately, sometimes doctors don't like that in those settings. And a lot of times I'm questioned a lot about, well, are you doing enough to take care of your pain? And I have to constantly validate my history and every treatment I've ever done, and that's very frustrating, especially when you're in a tremendous amount of pain and you're seeking help. And
right.
I'm very conscious as a woman of color. I have to be very aware of how I present myself, how I respond, and I already have a lot of anxiety going into these situations because I don't know what type of doctor is going to walk into that room. Is this doctor going to accept my protocol, or is this doctor going to fight me every step of the way until I, you know, have to go and let this person know I'm extremely educated about my disease. I have an extremely long history, well-documented history of my disease. That gives me a lot of anxiety, but I also have to be very aware that I'm a woman of color going into the situation. And I think that's something that a lot of people who are not of color don't understand. That's another barrier that BIPOC have to deal with when entering the healthcare system and navigating the healthcare system. It's extremely, as a person with chronic pain, it is an extremely frustrating obstacle to have to deal with. And I just know I have to, you know, kind of sit in that moment and just be mindful, okay, I'm just going to, as infuriating as this is making me, I'm going to just be the bigger person here, despite this extreme level of pain I'm in, which is ridiculous that I have to do this, but I'm going to be extremely straightforward and kind of educate this person right now in this moment, just so I can get the care that I need, and I shouldn't have to
carry
that. But that's a step I frequently have to take.
Well, I'm glad that you are here sharing your story. I'm glad that you are putting out the information for people. Dr. Charleston, thank you so much for being on the show today. Your knowledge was very helpful. This show will be archived. People can listen, you know, repeatedly to this information. People don't talk about this subject that much, and that's why it came to me. I said, you know what? I should do a show about this. And I wanted to have people of color because that's what my show focuses on, and to let people know that There are doctors that look like them that are out there that can help them, and there are support people that look like them that are out there as well that can help them. Thank you so much, Jamie, and thank you so much, Dr. Charleston, for coming on today.
Thank you for having us. Really,
thank you.
This is amazing. Really, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, you guys have a great day. Stay safe. Stay healthy with the COVID thing. Wear your mask and your gloves and your hand sanitizers.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
We will.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Everybody, be blessed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You.
Everybody, thank
Bye-bye.
You so much for tuning in. You can check me out on Twitter at Joy Keys. Again, on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. I know, right? I think you got it. It's Saturdays with Joy Keys. I'm going to be giving away a copy of Masande Ntshanga's book, Triangulum. He was on earlier today, South African writer. So you definitely want to follow so maybe you can win a copy of the book. Thank you for your support, and thank you for sharing with friends and family. I hope the information has been helpful.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.